When Swami Yogananda, who was author of Autobiography Yogi, came over in 1920, so 100 years ago, he tried to update the metaphor of Maya and illusion. And he said, well, rather than calling it Maya and illusion, he used the latest technology. And he said, it's like a film projector.
Right.
And even though the characters in the movie are suffering, the actors are still there behind. Mm-hmm. And so he encouraged his students of yoga to look away from the screen and look at the projector.
Welcome back to New Realities. I'm here with my very special co-host, Suzanne Ross, and we're talking about the upcoming San Diego Transcendence Retreat, September 27, 28, 2025.
You're invited to join us for our San Diego Transcendence Retreat, taking place September 27th through 28th. At the gorgeous Bahia Resort on Mission Bay. Our event includes presentations, workshops, meditations, and sound baths by some of the world's leading luminaries.
So when you go deep within anyone, you reach the same place. You reach universal consciousness.
When the flash of light comes, there will be a moment when the body starts to feel extremely heavy. Like it just will feel like your body weighs a billion pounds. As we're moving into this higher frequency, the weight of the karma cannot come with us.
Those soul aspects that were in my field merged into the physical body. Ken is infused with a collective, an embodied collective of divine entities.
Our event also includes a special mind sight and telepathy demonstration.
Now I have the three layers. I'm gonna walk down with him again, and someone could just open up any page in their pamphlet, and I will read whatever you point to.
With Dahlia and Lidu Burgoyne, and we've just added a metaphysical workshop with Daryl Anka.
The reason that I am creating the class by myself, as myself, teaching it as myself, is to spend more time to delve more deeply into a lot of his principles, to provide illustrations, to provide examples, to really help people understand his concepts much more deeply, to make them their own.
You'll want to sign up for our sunset dinner cruise on the bay. Just visit sandiegotranscendenceretreat.com.
And our special guest here and there will be Rizwan Burke of the Simulation Hypothesis. It's a new book. It almost said Stimulation
Hypothesis. That'd be a whole other book.
That's a different book. Simulation Hypothesis. Anyway, it's a fascinating subject, a great new perspective on reality, really. And I'm so happy you're joining us because the event is about transcending the old way. So Suzanne, jump in. And Suzanne's event, she's producing it. Talk about
Well, I saw Riz on the Joe Rogan show, and I'm just so fascinated by the concept that we're living in a simulation. Have a presentation of the soul behind the simulation. Read your book, Riz, and loved it. I loved your interview on Joe Rogan to begin with, but then just the way that you describe how we are likely in a simulation as information, data, comparing it to a virtual reality game, all really resonated with me. So bravo. Great
book.
Thank you.
Talk about how this is different than the old concept of Maya. It's all illusion. Now, this is all not real, and we're just the mind behind the reality. I mean, I think you bring it to another level.
Well, I think the way to think about it is that in any spiritual tradition, they had to explain something to the masses. And mm-hmm. so to do that, they had to come up with language that would be understood at the time. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking, you know, the Hindu Vedas, we're talking 3,000, 5,000 years ago, or even with Islam and Christianity, we're talking 1,500, 2,000 years ago. And so they had to come up with language and metaphors and concepts that would be understood. And yet they were trying to describe the spiritual world to people whose experiences relatively primitive technology.
Right.
And so over time, what has happened is I think that these metaphors can be updated. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, when Swami Yogananda, who was author of Autobiography Dr. Yogi came over in 1920, so 100 years ago, he tried to update the metaphor of Maya and illusion. And he said, well, rather than calling it Maya and illusion, he used the latest technology. And he said, it's like a film projector.
Right.
And even though the characters in the movie are suffering, the actors are still there behind. Mm-hmm. And so he encouraged his students of yoga to look away from the screen and look at the projector. And so you see, he came over, he was the first Indian Swami to come and live in the US. And so he used modern technology to describe to an American audience a concept which is very complicated. And so I believe if he were alive today, he would say, it's like a movie where the actors and the characters, but we're also the audience, and we're watching each other. We're kind of playing these roles with each other. And we have a script, but we don't always have to follow the script. We can change it. And these aren't our real bodies anyway. And what does that sound like? To me, that sounds like a massively multiplayer online role-playing game or MMORPG. Mm-hmm. And my background was in building video games before I wrote this book. And that's really what got me thinking about the parallels between what was happening in Silicon Valley with the development virtual reality, augmented reality with AI, and what the spiritual traditions have been telling us for thousands of years, and realize that perhaps there's a convergence there that most people don't see. And so that's part one of the themes that I'll be talking about at the conference in San Diego.
That is a convergence. And I think about the concept of avatars. We're avatars, right? Just like in a virtual reality game, but there is a source for ourself, just like there's a source for this universe. And it's that source universe, our source self, that is projecting this game. And there's many versions of the game, right? And I liked how in your book you said there could be one source, but when you start projecting it and fractalizing it, there can be multiple copies of that one source. And we talk about being, you know, multidimensional beings in many different timelines and dimensions all at once. Mm-hmm. But this source place is beyond time, timeless.
So if we see that we are the like these bodies, this world, this is a simulation of a higher reality, how do we change at this level to make it the best simulation we can have?
Well, it's a great question. And, you know, to your point of avatars, we are avatars that may have roles to play within the game itself. And we may have gone through a process that is just like choosing a character in a video game. And when you choose a character, you choose like the race of the character, you choose like the profession, like it's an elf or a dwarf who's going to be a wizard or a thief or a warrior, and you choose sort of their backstory and storyline. So it's possible that we are choosing our overall storyline, but within that storyline, we have the ability to make choices and to influence where we might want to go. Now, the way that video games work is they have quests and challenges along the way. And what happens is you start off with very simple quests that are easy to do, but then you build up difficulty over time. So it's possible that when we run into difficult situations here, it's really the more advanced players who are running into those difficulties because they've chosen the higher level quests, where the people who have everything easy, maybe the new players who don't have as much experience, just in the same way that actors tend to win Academy Awards for roles that are very difficult or roles that have characters that have been through intense suffering, for example. But at the same time, we choose challenges for ourselves. And so the challenge is to not be, say, particularly greedy in this lifetime and to be more generous to other people. So that might be a kind of challenge that we're working on. And I view karma as a type of database that exists in the cloud.
Right.
And so as we go through life, we're adding to this database in the same way that when you browse the internet, you know, there's things that are happening along the way and you're putting things in databases and then later those things come up to you as well.
Where does it eventually get us? What's the big deal? I mean, okay, we score more points, we get, but it's like, okay, we have more and more difficult challenges. It's like, what's the end game here? What's like, where's it going? What's the point?
Well, those are big questions
of all time.
Yeah, and I don't think we'll resolve it here. And I'm like, what do you think?
Because obviously,
to know thyself, Alan, it's to know thyself.
And then we know ourselves, guess what?
But you can think of this at two levels, okay? You can think of the simulation for an individual character.
Right.
And then you can think of the simulation for an entire civilization. Mm-hmm. And so for a character, they're probably working on specific challenges, difficulties, personality traits, lessons, etc. And sometimes we're there to play roles for other people. And so, you know, maybe you know someone who's particularly challenging in your life. Well, we all do. Perhaps they're playing a role, like what we call an NPC role, for us in order to give us the opportunity to overcome that specific aspect or that specific difficulty or the challenge. And we're just like, God, that person annoys me. But there's something about that person that, mm-hmm. that is within us. So I think at a personal level, why do we play video games?
Yes.
So
this is, I was just going to say
ask that. People two questions.
Right?
Why do we play video games and why do we run simulations?
Entertaining.
This gets right back to two levels. The reason we play video games is to have fun, but also to have experiences that we can't have outside of the game. Like I can't jump on a dragon and fly around and shoot at orcs in this particular physical quote unquote reality, but I can do it in a video game. And similarly, I think it's fair to assume that the challenges we have here with the emotions, the relationship difficulties, you know, maybe we don't have those outside of this particular simulation. Mm-hmm. So it gives us those experiences in the same way that I said actors typically win Oscars for these particularly challenging roles. And so that's one level of why we're here. Mm-hmm. The second level could be at a civilizational level. We're here to see how things might develop over time and to see what is the best outcome or most likely outcome. That's why we run simulations. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to run a simulation the weather or of a virus spreading or economics, you're going to say, okay, this is what's likely to happen. And then you say, well, what's the most favorable outcome? So you go back and you tweak the parameters and you rerun it again.
Right.
And then you rerun it again. And so at a civilization level, it could be, do we destroy the planet? Are we able to get off the planet? What's called the great filter? Are we able to build simulations within? So there are these big questions around how we evolve as a civilization. And that's where this idea that there might be a fractalized versions of ourselves comes into play, in that we may have run this reality multiple times.
Right.
One of the things that I talk about is the words of Philip K. Dick.
Yes. Amazing filmmaker.
Science fiction writer and, Blade Runner, Man in the High Castle, Minority Report. These were all based on his novels, the movies. And he came to believe that we were living in a simulation or what he called a computer programmed reality where it would be run and then the simulators would change the variables, and then they would run it again. So he came to his, I interviewed his wife, Tessa, and she told me he came to believe that he was communicating with these entities that were running the simulation, but he said that they told him, one, that they prevented the assassination of JFK in Dallas, and then he got assassinated in Orlando. And then when they prevented that, he got assassinated somewhere else. And then in the scenarios where he didn't get assassinated, it led to something catastrophic with him. War. And so it's possible that we are running these simulations and we are only in one branch of the simulations. And if you've ever seen the show Man in the High Castle,
the Nazis having won.
The Nazis and the Japanese. And he came to believe that was a real timeline. And if you watch it, in that there's a character who realizes this is just one timeline, there was another timeline where the Allies won, which is our timeline. Right. And so at a civilizational level, I guess.
Right.
You know, there are big questions that can be answered by running simulations. So I think it depends on how you look at it.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So we are running a simulation that this is the timeline where this is just another simulation that we may be stuck in.
It's possible this could be the current, what Philip K. Dick called the most actualized consensus view of reality. But there are other probabilities and possibilities. Well, and that's what ties to the idea of quantum mechanics and the multiverse, that there could be other realities as well, but this is the one we're focused on and we're observing.
Well, we're here, but this might not be the most accurate. This may be others on other levels, right?
Yeah.
So at this event that Suzanne's putting together, Transcendence Retreats, was about like transformation. How do people then use these ideas to transcend and transform their lives? Like, how would they apply that to themselves?
Well, I think the first way to apply it is to think of yourself as a character in a video game. And in a video game, you ask yourself, and you said this earlier, are we here to get maximum points? What are we here to get? Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on the type of game. Like, I don't think the nature of this game is Grand Theft Auto, where we're trying to abuse each other.
Thank you. Although you wouldn't know that sometimes.
Sometimes,
some people are playing Grand Theft Auto.
Some people might think so. But the way to figure it out is to say, well, how is the game evaluated? And it turns out, across all the scriptures, they tell us that we're really here to see how we treat other people. Mm-hmm. And that at the end of life, if you listen to the near-death experiencers, mm-hmm. they have the life review. And what is the life review? You review every single event that ever happened in your entire life. But it's as if you're in a holographic, panoramic, three-dimensional reality. What does it sound like? It sounds like a virtual reality. But you replay it from the point of view of other people. So now you see that even today, one of the most popular types of content on YouTube is watching video game replays. So you sit there and you rewatch a replay. Like when my nephew was 3 years old, he said to his father, my brother, he said, I want to watch Star Wars. And my brother said, oh, you want to watch Star Wars the movie? He said, no, I want to watch that man and the woman playing the Star Wars game. Because it was a recording of them playing the video game.
At 3 years old.
It's pretty amazing. But if you think of our entire reality as virtual, well, now we have a mechanism for the life review, which tells us how we evaluate ourselves, which means that we want to be kinder and nicer to other people. Mm-hmm. So that's one major way people can take this in. And I think the other major way is what I hinted at earlier, which is that when we go through difficult situations, instead of viewing them as, a blessing or a curse, we view them as a challenge or a quest that we're taking on. And it may be really difficult. Mm-hmm. And those of us that, for example, like myself, who've been through serious physical ailments, and I'm sure many people have, you realize, you can sort of give up hope, or you can view it as a challenge. And I think that is a perspective mm-hmm. that's useful to have.
Or if you meet someone you might not get along with or like, or challenging, you can see not to hate that person, but to see what is the challenge I'm being presented with. Right. To overcome my own judgment.
That's right. And then, with video games nowadays, with multiplayer video games, you have a friends list who are people that you're going to play with. And then you communicate with them. You send them messages back and forth.
Yeah.
And then you say, hey, let's all meet at this part of the virtual world to storm the castle mm-hmm. at this time of day. And in the video game of life, we perhaps are doing the same kinds of things, saying, hey, when I'm 30 years old or I'm 40 years old, I'm going to go to, Los Angeles and on Santa Monica Pier, you're going to see, you're going to see me wearing this necklace or whatever.
Right, right.
And it's possible we're going to set up these adventures or these multiplayer mm-hmm. quests, if you will. And by learning to pay attention to our intuition and our synchronicity, I think we can start to appreciate life more, but also do more of what we were meant to do. Because sometimes we act like NPCs ourselves, like an LLM that mm-hmm. is, if you think of an LLM, it's just trained on this data. That's all it knows. Mm-hmm. And when we are just acting on what we've been trained on in this physical life.
Robotically, in a way.
Yeah, robotic. So this is something I call NPC mode. So you can have an avatar in a video mm-hmm. game, or you can have an NPC, which is all AI. Mm-hmm. But what happens, I think, is most of us forget that we're also players with soul mm-hmm. that have a storyline, and mm-hmm. we start acting like NPCs. Mm-hmm. So we enter into NPC mode. Mm-hmm. And that's what the ancient traditions have metaphorically tried to communicate to us, that we cross the river of forgetfulness mm-hmm. that day in the Greek traditions. Mm-hmm. Or that we, we go through the 70,000 veils of forgetfulness in mm-hmm. Sufism. Mm-hmm. Or the main poem, the goddess of forgetfulness, brews us the tea of forgetfulness. That's the Chinese tradition. So they were all trying to describe something that's a little bit like Neo in The Matrix, where he puts the VCI in and he's like, whoa, is this real? And he kind of forgets that there's a world out there.
So how do we then see the Matrix itself? How do we, step outside, see these are avatars, this is not us, we are really operating the game from a non-local reality of super consciousness and...
I think that's what the transcendence process is all about. And mm-hmm. I think that that's where many of these spiritual techniques come into play, because we're getting so much data. Like, assume the idea of a VR helmet or a brain computer interface, those are just metaphors. That doesn't mean we're literally sitting in a pod like in The Matrix. But we are getting the information, which is just bits of information. And it turns out most physicists tell us the world is just bits. And so we have to stop putting all of our attention on that, and then that gives us the ability to then remember things we might not have otherwise remembered. Mm-hmm. But we can also pay attention to synchronicity and coincidences and what I call clues.
Mm-hmm. And like, what's a clue?
Like, a clue would be a type of synchronicity that's perhaps pointing you in a certain
can
direction.
Share one that happened to you?
Sure. Well, I'll share like a technological aspect of synchronicity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which wasn't a synchronicity per se, but it kind of shows you how things could work in the physical world. And so synchronicity is when you have an inner thought and then it's an event in the outside world and they kind of relate to each other. And so the other day I was shopping for a backpack online and I saw a specific backpack and I was going to buy it. And then I pulled up my phone the next day on Facebook or something and there's an ad for that backpack. And I thought, that's weird. Now, we all happen to know how that works, because what I did was, when I put that in my cart, it registered my intent. And that's what we call it. I used to be in the advertising industry. We put it in a database. And then later, as ads are being generated, it was looking at that and correlating and creating a situation for me. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's what synchronicity is. Jung calls it an acausal connection, but there's an information component behind the scenes. Yes.
But that's being directed, it seems like, us, the superconscious mind, you know.
Right, is directed, or what I call our writer's room.
Yeah.
I say, what are we going to throw at them? No, we want to nudge them this way.
Nudge.
So let's give them a synchronicity or a coincidence. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I remember a friend, I was in Arizona years ago. I live there now, but years ago, we were there and a friend was trying to buy a house and she couldn't find a place that she liked, and you know, it was during a real estate boom and everyone was buying houses. And then for half an hour in front of her, there was this car with you know, those tires that have something on the back, and it said, "Not all those who wander are lost." And she said it was there for like half an hour in front of her. And then she came to me and said, you know, what is this from? I said, oh, it's from the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
But she was not a fan of Lord of the Rings. She doesn't like that stuff. So, but there was a message for her, which was, don't worry about not buying a house right now. It's okay to not. And then later, a few years later, and this is my partner now. And so we had a house in California that we weren't sure we wanted to keep anymore because we traveled so much. And we flew back and there were all kinds of problems with the house. And we walked into, and our cars weren't working, and we walked into Hertz to rent a car. And this guy just walks right in with his friends. He turns away from his friends and turns to me and says, do you know that not all those who wander are lost? And we ended up selling that house and just, you know, basically living
there. Awesome.
And so you can see these threads and coincidences and synchronicities that happen.
Sometimes it's right in front of your face. I remember one time I was thinking, what shuttle company am I going to hire for my Sedona Ascension retreat? And then I kind of looked ahead of me, and right in front of me, there was a shuttle bus with the name of the shuttle company and a phone number. Right in front of me. I was like, oh my God, like, ask and you shall receive.
You didn't have to wait long, did you?
I manifested that away. Riz, I have a question about evolving, mastering the game you're in so that you can up-level to the next level of the game. Because game implies winning or losing, right? I mean, it's a game, you're playing it, right? I don't know much about the virtual reality game world, but I would imagine that you have to master one level of the game in order to move on to the next level of the game.
Well, it depends on the type of game again. Because there are games and there are games. And turns out there's a class of games that are called virtual worlds.
Mm.
Or if you've heard the term, the metaverse. Mm-hmm. Facebook changed its name from Facebook to Meta because they wanted to try to build the metaverse. But basically, that is a virtual world where you're playing a character, an avatar. But your goal is not necessarily to fight or to get points, but you're living a virtual life. And there was a platform called Second Life, for example, years ago.
Yeah.
Really popular back in
2007,
2008. And that was probably the best known metaverse product at the time. And people would go in there and they'd have real lives and jobs in there. And so I'd go in and ask them, you go to your job, you come home, and then you log in so you can go be a bartender in the virtual world.
I know.
And you get paid peanuts.
Ridiculous.
But there was something about, you know, that character, they're building this character and they're living this virtual life. So all I'm saying is that while there may be levels, I don't think there's this simple level way, the ways that we think of levels is, you've got this many points, you go to the next level. It's rather a set of what types of challenges are you mostly concerned with? Are you mostly concerned with kind of, you know, physical survival challenges? Are you mostly concerned with certain types of issues? Are you most concerned with relationship issues? And those are different levels. Or have you come back to try to be more spiritual mm-hmm. in this life? Mm-hmm. And then that those are the people whose storylines, you know, may lay out the types of situations that would lead them to be more spiritual. Mm-hmm. And I think we all have a sense of this in our lives. We have a sense of what we're meant to do, even if we're not doing it. Mm-hmm. Like if you had asked me in high school, what are you going to do? I would say, I'm going to be a software entrepreneur and then I'm going to be a writer. And that's exactly what happened. But I thought I was going to shift at the old age of 28, because I was in high school, so I thought that was old. But it wasn't until, and I did start writing my first book, Zen Entrepreneurship, at 28.
Yes, you did.
But I didn't actually become a full-time writer until I was 48, and it took like a personal tragedy to get me off of, you know, this track. And during that time, I got clear visions and messages saying, don't you remember? You're supposed to do this and you're supposed to do this and you're spending way too much time over here. Mm-hmm. You were supposed to do more of the writing, and so we're going to make it so you physically don't have the energy to do anything else.
Wow.
And it was after my heart surgery. So I ended up having just enough energy to go to Starbucks mm-hmm. in an Uber because I couldn't even walk at the time and do a few hours of writing. Wow. And that's when I wrote the simulation hypothesis, because it brought together all of these different threads in my life.
Well, that virtual reality world, like Second Life, and then some that came after, actually faded out because people found that there was really no meaning and purpose to it. They were just hanging out in this virtual world, and it really wasn't very exciting, and there wasn't really much purpose. And then you ask in your book, well, what is the purpose of this life anyways?
Well, but if you look at it today, like, for example, my nephews, they're teenagers now. In that age range. And so we used to go out and play, you know, baseball or whatever after school. They come home from school and then they get online in Roblox or Fortnite, or and that's how they hang out with their friends mm-hmm. in the virtual world. So, you know, just because something's virtual doesn't mean it isn't real. Like, we're actually having this conversation in person, but if we were having it in Zoom, it doesn't mean we're not having a conversation.
Or the people watching it will be seeing, like, you know, a digital version of this conversation. Doesn't mean it hasn't actually happened in another place and time.
Right. And there's lasting effects
right.
of the conversation. I mean, you can learn a language over Zoom. Doesn't mean you didn't really learn the language. It was virtual, but it still happened and it still affected you and it changed who you are.
Like experiences. You could watch a movie and it didn't happen to you, but you're deeply affected by the characters in the movie.
Right. So that's why I would say it's not necessarily, I mean, the older games kind of phased out, but then you have a whole new set of games that are way more popular than those were. And so, you know, that gets into game mechanics. But the fact is that I think younger people today are more comfortable with avatars and being in virtual worlds and really, you know, having friends than we were back in our day.
Mm-hmm. You know, another slightly off the topic, but we had discussed this whole idea about UFOs and how, and we agreed that what we're seeing today is like as if we're living in a science fiction movie. There's a science fiction edge to the UFOs. That's a projection because of all the programming. And there really is something happening there. Yeah. The only context we have is the simulation or the story of a science fiction story.
Yes.
And there's no other way to relate to this because it's a whole field beyond our cognitive reality. So, I mean, that's how I relate to that. So, UFO, science fiction, and we must be in a science, but that's not what's really happening. It's just a program of how we relate to this. So what's a better way of relating to a phenomena that's not cognized in the everyday world that most people are living? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think with the UFO phenomenon in particular, we're looking at it through a cultural lens.
Yes.
And that cultural lens is shaped through popular media.
Exactly.
And of which science fiction is the most popular. Like in the 1950s, when there were aliens, they were always from where? Mars, right?
Right.
That's why? Because the people at the time could conceive of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't look at the contactees at the time, if a person from the 1950s were to ask them, where are you from? They would say, oh, we're from Venus. Doesn't mean they're actually from Venus, but that was something that they could understand.
That's right.
I think it's we're from another dimension. We're not really
that
here.
That wasn't a concept.
That wasn't an easy concept.
As we evolve, we say, oh, now they're from Pleiades or Theta Reticulum. And now
the next start, but that's still within our paradigm.
That's right. And now they're interdimensional because we're still
But the stories,
yes.
You know, if you look back at time, there are stories in the Middle East of the jinn, for example, that are very similar to modern abduction stories.
Right.
And so is it that we are perceiving them as these aliens from another planet and that the media is... So I've written on this topic for like major outlets, like NBC News, CNN, and they always say, well, you know, we don't want you to talk about whether it's aliens or not. We want you to talk about that. We don't want you to talk about this other stuff.
No, it's all part of the same thing.
Yeah, there's all this other stuff that it could be, which is that there could be other players in the simulation.
Exactly.
Many UFOs exhibit behaviors that look like projections, like they move from point to point.
Pop in and out.
Or they could pop in and out. And that's how you travel in most video games. If you want to go to the other side of the earth, you don't actually go, you like disappear here and you portal to this other set of XYZ coordinates. And so is something going on where they're projecting into our physical reality, but they're presenting it to us. Now, remember, in the multi-user video game model, there is no shared rendered reality. Okay, so you are watching it on your computer, I'm watching it on my computer, and you're watching it on your phone.
Thing, right?
We think we are saying the same thing, but we're not necessarily, because the server is sending down information, and then the server is synchronizing our reality. So, for example, you and I could be standing in a field. And, you know, Alan's very advanced. So he said, I see the UFO clearly. And I'm like, you know, only level one or level two.
Right, right.
And I'm looking up and saying, I don't see anything.
Right.
There's nothing there. What are you talking about? And there are UFO cases like that.
Yeah.
Out there,
yeah.
Where one person sees one thing, the other person doesn't see it or sees something else. And we do that in video games.
Mm-hmm.
So we send, it's called conditional rendering. We will render based upon your character, your level, what skills you have.
Uh-huh.
Like you have the magic spell to see dragons, see hidden dragons, and other people don't. But the fact is, it's just like in Zoom. If you and I were talking on Zoom, you couldn't be 100% sure.
Right.
These pictures are actually behind us. Right, because it can change.
So the UFO phenomena seem like a key to another level of the simulation. You know how, like in a game, there might be a figure or a magic thing that pops up that we didn't know was there. Suddenly, it's there because we've taken a certain move down there.
Yes.
And then that's there, and it gives us a little clue to a deeper level of the simulation or the game. Is that
it? Could be. It could be. It could also be if you look at... if you wanted to influence like a civilization to go a certain way. So now we get back to this idea that entire civilizations and timelines, if you wanted to influence them to go this way, you might try to project certain types of phenomena to see if they go this way or if they go that way. So there's an element of what Jacques Vallée might call the control mechanism.
Right.
Or in this case, it could be a steering. Or if you've ever watched the Hunger Games, you know, there's like the people in the game, and then there's what they call care packages. And they'll have them go in little balloons into the...
Is that your feeling about the UFO phenomenon, that is a kind of a care package manipulation of social consciousness somehow?
I think it's a combination of things, and I think that's probably consistent with what we've heard. And I believe there is an element of that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there are elements of... beings that have been here all along.
Right.
And there may be an extraterrestrial component as well. I'm not ruling that out, because if you think of a video game world that has multiple planets, you might have life on multiple planets. And in fact, part of it might be to have them develop individually and then see where they end up, and you send them things at different points. So it's a very complex phenomenon. I don't claim to have the answer, but there's an intersection of that.
And maybe they're logging in. Like, you know, where they come from. We don't know if they come from, if you see an alien, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they're just logging in as a player in the game, and then they log out.
And they're visiting our game, and they log out.
Right? Yeah, and they log out.
It's weird, though. All these aliens or craft seem to know that they are playing a game, and we're just like on the linear level, but they seem all to know, I think, from what I've seen, that they can intersect in our simulation and then, like you say, pop out. But they all know that, and we don't.
We don't. That's
not
right.
Yet.
Yes.
But as we evolve, right, to more advanced levels of the game and become more advanced users, or, you know.
Right. I mean, there's stories of bilocation from movies going back.
Well, you know, we're here at the Psygame, which is a whole other level of human consciousness. And when you can activate your psi function, your telepathic, your remote viewing, your remote sensing, seeing through blindfold, that is another level of the simulation that makes us better players or,
yeah.
I mean, happier, more fulfilled. And I think maybe we're at that transition point where we're going through a reset and we're going to game 2.0 or whatever,
yeah.
3.0.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, is that,
yeah, that's very possible.
Yeah.
As people realize these things are possible.
Right.
Then I think more and more people will be able to have these abilities. And it's not that they weren't possible before. It's just that we were so locked in to what I call our first person perspective in a video game, like if you're an avatar. But if you notice how the game looks, there's all kinds of information on the screen that can't be seen in the rendering itself.
Right.
And so the character might close their eyes, but if you move the camera up a little bit, you can still see everything that's happening in the room. So you look at, like, we've seen great demonstrations here at the Psy Games.
Like, yes.
MindSight, for example.
Amazing.
Colors, etc. Now, if you just step away from, if you like pull your helmet off a little bit, when the helmet's only looking at that, but you look at the screen, you can, the woman that was doing it today, she describes these windows that open up and she can see through that window.
Amazing.
And I think that there's an interesting phenomenon there.
Right. So we're upgrading our possibilities of playing this game for a more fun kind of adventure, right?
Yeah, and perhaps a more spiritual, more spiritually, whereas in the past we've been concerned more with the material.
The rendering aspect, Riz, just really blows my mind. How, like right now, what can we see? We can see that building over there. I can see her. We can see the door. You know what I mean? But that's all that needs to be rendered in this moment. Even though there's a whole big world out there, we can't see it right now. We don't need to see it right now. That's too much data to render at once.
It doesn't have to be too much. If you expand your mind, you can see the interdimensional beings that
without your physical eyes.
Yeah, right.
Okay, but now that's another way of rendering. Yeah. But just in this moment.
Yeah.
Right? We're like rendering this right now because that's all we need to render. I mean, I just think that's really fascinating. And it's a way that you can play the game with that. Like, how does that compare to a video game?
Yeah, I mean, it turns out that's what we do in video games. And the reason we can render these vast worlds, like within, say, World of Warcraft, or there's a game called No Man's Sky that has 18 quintillion planets.
Wow.
Okay, there's no video game team on Earth that could design that many planets, right? Because it happens programmatically and they get generated on demand.
Wow.
And so the key for us to be able to do that is to compress data, but also we only need to render the part where your avatar, your character is actually at. The rest of the world is still there in terms of information. But it doesn't need to be rendered at that moment.
Is that like quantum physics?
It's like quantum physics. So if you look at the observer effect, from a physics point of view, it's really strange because there are multiple probabilities and it's in what's called superposition. And it's not until it gets observed or measured or interacted. But basically the idea is on demand, when it's needed, only then does it become a real particle in one specific state. And for me, as a computer scientist, like that's weird, but not that weird because that's what we do in video games.
Right.
That's how we build. In computer science, it's always about limited resources. Mm-hmm. How do you use those computing resources I'm talking about to render this stuff?
How has this helped your personal life here in this simulation? How have you been happier because you understand or maybe have that?
Well, I think it's a kind of way to understand this idea of that you are not your character.
Mm-hmm.
And
like in Buddhism, you're not your body.
In Buddhism, you're not your body. In Hinduism, there's the body, then there's the Atman, and in Sufism as well. What happens is they end up using the same metaphors. Rumi, for example, is a Sufi mystic, well known now in the West as a poet.
The best-selling poet in America, you realize that.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Yes. But he also wrote a pretty heavy-duty Sufi treatise called the Masnavi in Persian. And it's basically an instruction for self-awareness, and he says in there that the soul puts on the body like a pair of clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that metaphor is the same metaphor that gets used in other traditions. So in the Bhagavad Gita, for example, they literally say that the soul puts on garments, like it puts on a body as if it was garments and then takes off the garments. And so it's using that as an analogy. I mean, it doesn't mean they're physically putting on clothes, the soul is putting on clothes, but it means that you are basically becoming into this character. And I think today we can use a more sophisticated metaphor, which is that of the video game character, and that you are playing this particular character for now, but that you are not the character and that there may be a part of you that's stretching it. So for me personally, it's helped me develop a broader perspective on this idea that, okay, it seems to me as if I'm my body, but there's another part of me. And it seems to me that this personality is all I know. But again, there's a larger part of me. And so that helps, I think, in becoming more, a little more detached, a little more calm, and a little more spiritual, but also in getting beyond the noise of life.
Right. And what's so exciting about this time is like the simulation is being upgraded right in front of us. Like that's how I feel with the Psy games, with the telepathy tapes, with what else? The whole UFO phenomenon becoming more of a reality. There's so many things coming into this plane. Like we reach another level and then you get popped in other things, right?
Well, I think there's some of that going on. Yeah. The telepathy tapes, for example, was the number one podcast for a while. Right. But at the same time, you're getting more and more resistance from scientists and atheists.
They're just the old guard.
Right. But it's interesting that I don't know that they're fading away. You know, I was on some podcasts in LA and I got extreme pushback on the idea that there might be a soul or there might be anything outside of physical reality.
I wouldn't talk to those people there.
Yeah. No. I mean, I concur with you. But what I'm saying is somehow these people need a way to talk. And what's been happening is that the people that are becoming more conscious, with the Psy games, with all of these things. But then there are people that are going the other way. And so what I hope to do with Simulation Hypothesis, the reason I wrote the book, was to give them a way to talk to each other with language. I mean, I can go to the biggest atheist and talk to them about simulation theory.
Now
they may or may not buy it, but at least we can have that conversation.
You
can't go to a lot of these scientists and say, God created the earth in 6 days, right? They're just going to, that's nonsense.
Right.
Well, it turns out it's not nonsense if you use AI and you're using a simulated world and time outside.
Right.
But you can use, and you can go to the most religious fundamentalist and say, the world is a hoax. It's an illusion.
Right.
And so you can do both of those things. And so I think we can help to bring them together. But, you know, for the telepathy tapes, the researcher was Dr. Diane
Paul. Yes.
And it turns out she called me a few years back before the telepathy tapes and she said, you know, I've been studying these, you know, acquired savant syndrome, and we're going to put on a symposium because I think there's an information layer and the world is like a simulation, seems to be the way these guys are accessing this information. So she put on a conference or a symposium that myself and other people spoke at that was about savant syndrome and the simulation hypothesis. So
wow.
We can start to see that looking at it as an information-based world is something that opens up possibilities that people might have not been open to.
That's what I like about your work, everything Suzanne's putting together at the upcoming San Diego Transcendence Retreat. Everyone's coming in with these new possibilities, and Tucker talking about the angelic realm coming in with possible solar flares. Who else? Sarah Brexman Cosme.
Past life regression.
Yes, there's all these new elements coming into play that makes this time really exciting and really about transcendence. And you definitely want to be in San Diego before that.
We hope you'll join us.
You know what occurs to me is that when we're accessing these advanced gifts, skills, and abilities, including remote viewing or telepathy or, you know, seeing interdimensionally, is we're tuning into our gamer self. We're becoming our gamer. We're becoming our source self, and our source self has the ability to see all timelines unfolding all at once in one eternal now moment, right? So we become our gamer self. We can become the observer, right? Like Eckhart Tolle, you can become the observer and you can view some other timeline, just like your gamer self can view any of these timelines,
right?
And so if you master the ability to tune into your essence, you know, then you can see beyond time, any timeline, right?
Some of us are there, you know, some of us have done that. The those people have woken up, Yogananda, I know you've written a book about it. They've seen the timelines. They've seen, it seems like someone like that has seen beyond time and space. And so,
and temporarily we have. You can remote view.
I can.
That's non-local consciousness.
It certainly is.
Right? So, channeled. And,
yeah, so it's yeah. happening to the general population. That's why this is a sold out weekend. You know, people want to be here and find out what's possible. Dahlia and Lidu will be in San Diego. Did a fantastic demonstration. That is a game changer. That is a game changer. Seeing through blindfolds. Yes.
Yeah, and she had 100% accuracy.
Well, because she sees. It's colors. Like, do you see a bed? You see a table? It's right. Like, I think it's like that. Not, yeah. Are you accurate? No, that's just what you're seeing. Of course you're accurate.
Right, yeah. But seeing that done in person,
that's amazing,
is a game changer for people that might be skeptical.
Yes. Right?
Because even most people who try MindSight don't get that.
Well, she was teaching children yesterday, and these kids were getting it right
away.
Yeah,
which is amazing, right?
Yes, yes, yes. So we all can do this. We're all infinite. We're all forever.
We're all one.
And we're all
out. So she's seeing through the eyes of... Yeah. Like if you're looking at the book and she's blindfolded right. over here, she's seeing through your eyes.
Can be, yes. I know it's all right. It's very strange.
That's the oneness and the entanglement, right?
Yeah.
I think that's amazing. We're sharing. This is a shared field of consciousness.
Well, that's going to happen in San Diego.
We could go on and on.
Which will be a lot of fun.
Thank you.
So in San Diego, San Diego Transcendence Retreat.com.
Yes, September 27th, 28th, 2025. Love to have you there with Riz and a bunch of other greats.
Thank you.